find the time, freedom, and financial independence you can have through entrepreneurship. Whether you're a buyer, seller, franchisee, franchisor, or consultant, find everything you need to know about franchising right here. Welcome to the Level Up with Nick Lopez Show.
Welcome to the Level Up Show with Nick Lopez, where we have the absolute pleasure of learning from thought leaders in business, franchising, and high performance personal development. Today's guest, that's right, most certainly goes without exception. She is the founder of Just Between Friends. My gosh, what I love about her entrepreneurial story is that not only did she successfully scale a national brand alongside incredible franchise partners, but one of those rock star franchise partners acquired her company when she exited. I just think that that is so inspiring. Most recently, she founded an incredible organization where she is able to help founders and franchise systems level up. That's right. Shine Executive Coaching is the company that she is currently behind the realm on. Shannon Wilburn, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Nick. Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited to have you on, Shannon. I'll tell you what, meeting you, I have personally leveled up. So thank you.
Well, I love being around you because it makes me a better person as well. So I would call us friends. We've known each other for what? We've maybe known each other for about 3 years.
Time flies.
Yeah. Getting to hang out on a monthly basis, for the last couple of years. Time has totally flown.
Right. No kidding.
Yeah.
And so Shannon, thank you again for not only what you've done for myself and Lime, but the franchise industry at large. So thank you.
Well, absolutely.
So speaking of which, right, most folks don't go around life thinking about getting into franchising. In fact, most people don't even realize that a lot of the companies that they work with are franchises, right? People often think Burger King or McDonald's. Those are the traditional franchise companies. But I had a mentor, Shannon, tell me once that, you know, as long as it's moral, ethical, and makes money, it can be franchised. And that includes something like a painting company. And so, Shannon, would you share with the audience, how did franchising find you?
Yeah. Thank you for the question. So I'll go back to when I was 12 years old, because I feel like this was a pivotal moment in my life that then led to, in the long run, franchising. When I was 12 years old, my dad was 33, and which I think is close to your age, right, Nick?
Yep, just about there.
But I was 12. I don't think you have a 12-year-old. So they
almost.
My mom and dad had us when they were in college. And when I say us, I have an identical twin sister. And when we were 12, my dad got sick. He was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, and he was at the height of his career as a 33-year-old CFO of an oil and gas company. And he went from a cane to a walker to a wheelchair in the span of 6 weeks. And then he went on disability insurance, and our life changed significantly. Of that to say, my sister and I very quickly learned the value of a dollar. And my dad put us on a clothing budget. We had never had a budget before. We lived in Midland, Texas. We would drive to Dallas to go on shopping sprees with my mom. And we would come home, have tons of clothes in our closet, with tags. And I just thought that was normal because that's how I was being raised. When my dad got sick and went on disability, my mom went to work, our life changed. And that clothing budget, he told us, if you have you have this amount of money to spend for the year, and when it's gone, it's gone. You can spend it all in January if you want, but once it's gone, don't come crying to me if you need some new shoes or you want a prom dress or you want cleats for whatever sport you're in. And so my mom gave us the hint that we should start shopping consignment because it would stretch our dollar. These were gently used items. Back then, thrifting was definitely not a thing. I know it is now, but consignment was, it was something that you could do. You could have dignity in shopping. You got to try things on. And my mom said, only buy it if you love it. And so that's how we really went through junior high and high school, being, you know, making our dollar stretch in that way. I went to college, ended up getting married, started having children, was still shopping consignment for myself. It was just natural to start shopping consignment for my children when I started having them. And my degree is elementary education. I wanted to stay home with my kids, and so I was looking for something to do from home. And my mom was actually the one who gave me the idea. She said, there's this event that some of my coworkers have gone to in Fort Worth, and you should start something like this in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And that's where we lived. And I was like, she gave me the information that she had, which was not a lot because she had not had firsthand experience attending this event. But she got together her friends and they gave her information and she passed it on to me. And then I thought about it, prayed about it, and went looking for someone to give me their kind of take on this idea of a children's consignment concept. So not a brick and mortar location, but an event where people would bring their items, they would drop them off, they would be tagged at home, and then we would run the event, people would come shop, and then afterwards the items could get donated or the consigners could come pick up their unsold items. So I reached out to a friend at my church, her name's Devin Tackett, and I said, what do you think about this idea? And she was a thrifter. She was garage sales every Saturday. She knew how to stretch a dollar. And she said, it sounds great. Can I do it with you? And that's how our partnership formed. So I do have a co-founder, Devin Tackett. And so we started growing just between friends. We convinced 17 of our friends from church to be our first consigners. We had the event in my very small living room. My house at the time was 1400 square feet. And so the living room in a 1400 square foot home. Because we had 17 people, that was our first try. So we got everything ready for everyone. People dropped it off at my house in garbage bags and we tagged everything. We clipped loose thread. We laundered it. We hung it up. And that first event, we did $2,000 in sales and Devin made $150 and I made $150. And this was in 1997. So back in the 1900s. We did that event, and after that event was over, the shoppers who shopped said, when are you doing this again? The sellers who sold said, when are you doing this again? Because the sellers were making money. They were making a percentage of whatever they were selling, and the shoppers were saving 50 to 90% off retail. So it was a win-win all around. So Devin and I looked at each other, and we're like, are we doing this again? And I'm like, yeah, but not in my house. So we convinced one of my rich friends who had a three-car garage to let us do it in her house. And that went well. And then I think we were in a garage for maybe two or three seasons. And then we went to a church gymnasium. And then we went to the local fairgrounds. And we grew that event for 6 years. Season over season, we would have two events per year. The community really supported us, really came out. And what was happening in that first 6 years of just between friends is friends and family from around the nation were reaching out saying, hey, Shannon, I've heard you're doing this consignment event. I would love to do that in my area. Can you teach me how to do this? And so, we were freely giving away all of the operations, the processes, the standard operating procedures, and even letting them use the name Just Between Friends. My business background and my co-founder's journalism, I'm sorry, my elementary education background and my co-founder's journalism background. We didn't know what intellectual property was. We didn't know what trademarks were. We did not have any idea that what we were doing probably was not going to set us up for success. So before we knew it, there were 10 or 12 locations in California, Colorado, Florida, Texas, and Oklahoma. And we were helping them do what we were doing, like on the phone all the time, pre-Zoom, right? And helping them figure out how to do this in their area. And very quickly, it became overwhelming because I did have a full-time job. I did have 2 children. I was also the youth minister's wife at our church, which was an unpaid part-time job. And I was complaining one day to a friend, one of my clients for my other job, and said, "Oh my gosh, I'm on the phone all day helping these people, you know, do what I'm doing." And he said, "Well, Shannon, are you profitable?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "Well, are they profitable?" And I said, "Well, I don't know. I've never asked. That doesn't feel like a question that I should be asking them." And he said, "Well, if you're profitable and they're profitable, you should think about franchising." And I did not understand what franchising was. So I said, "What's that?" He made it sound so simple, Nick, which we all know it is not simple, right? The audience that's listening to this, he made it sound so simple. He said, "You just get all those things that you're helping these people with, how to market, how to set up the event, how to get media involved, all of these things. You just write that down. Just take it out of your brain, put it on paper, and that becomes your operations manual. And then you get an attorney to put a contract together, and then they pay you for your support." And I was like, "Oh, okay." So I left his office, drove straight to Barnes & Noble, bought the book Franchising for Dummies, read that from cover to cover. Then I started talking to my co-founder about it. And then we started praying about it. And we didn't know anyone in the franchising space except for one couple that went to our church. They had franchised a concept called Cookie Advantage. And so we talked to them about it. And then my twin sister, who lived in the Dallas area, she said, "I am in the same circle with the wife of the guy who started Cece's Pizza. Would you like me to see if I can make a connection?" And so she made that connection, and Devin and I drove to Dallas for a three-hour meeting with the guy who started Cece's Pizza, Joe Croce, and he gave us 3 hours of advice, and we left there, and we never looked back. We went and just started, we got an attorney, and that is how franchising found me. And just very quickly, because it's been a really long time, that was in the end of 2003. So we went to all of the people who had helped us get started, all of those locations that we had helped get started. And we said, "We want you to be our first franchisees." And I did not know that. I didn't even know the word proving the concept, or validating the concept, or whatever you want to call it. But that is exactly what we were doing over that 3.5 years. And they were helping us level up our own company through their own innovation that they were coming up with. And so it was very, I really feel like the Lord went before us on that, because when we did, all but 2 of those people became our first franchisees, and we call them charter members. There's still 3 charter members left after all these years. And then we started selling franchises in January of 2004. And over the years, we grew just season over season and year over year in the number of franchises and and our unit level economics as well. That's continued to rise, which I think is amazing in a legacy brand that it continues to rise. So Devin and I reorganized the company in 2011. She took the Tulsa business, which, by the way, the Tulsa business, when we started franchising, I look back and I'm like, I probably should not have franchised. But because it was doing 400,000. So 400,000, you know, 20 something years ago, right? We thought, oh my gosh, we have this amazing business. It's doing 400,000. We want to give other people the opportunity to do this. But I did think, Nick, at the time, I was like, man, it's never going to be more than 400,000. Like, I thought that's the top. We felt like we were a huge consignment event. You know, we would have people waiting in line. It was huge. And so I thought we're going to copy paste this. But what happened when we started franchising was the Tulsa business continued to grow right alongside the franchise system. And it became this monster, quite frankly. It was like this that was taking up too much of my time when I was needing to be over here supporting franchises. And we lost some franchises, I'm thinking in 2010. I think we closed several locations, maybe like 8 or 10 locations. And that was a wake-up call to me to look at, okay, the support is not where it needs to be if I have this many closing. And so Devin and I decided to reorganize the company. She took what was then a $1.4 million. So it had grown $1 million in that 7 years, top line revenue. And so she took that business, and then I took the franchise system to run 100% and continued growing the company. And lots of different fun stories in there. But ultimately, in December of 2022, I had a transaction, and I did not do. I'm not gonna call it non-traditional, because I think transactions. I think lots of founders think they hear about PE. They hear about private equity coming in. They hear about selling to a strategic. But there are lots of different ways that you can take some chips off the table. And so, and I don't even know if you want to get into that, but you alluded to it earlier, Nick, that my largest multi-unit franchisee ultimately ended up acquiring the company. And so I have the great privilege of continuing to work with them. And I sit on the advisory board, and Tracy Panace is the new CEO and owner of Just Between Friends franchise system. She's doing an excellent job. She's a phenomenal leader. And it feels really fun to be able to be in the background of something that the Lord gave you the opportunity to be a part of for 20 something years. And I always said to myself, this is the Lord's business. When he is ready to appoint a new leader, a new manager of his business, I don't want to step in the way. And the Lord had put Tracy's name on my heart years earlier. I had not mentioned this to not one person. This was just, you know, she was kind of in my back pocket because she was developing her leadership skills. She had hired a coach. She was doing all the right things. She was mentoring other franchisees. She was our number one franchisee and multi-unit franchisee. So it was hard not to look at her and say she would do a good job. But then there was that, you know, when you have private equity coming to you, but ultimately I didn't really want the culture to change in the company, and not that private equity, like it would change, but I wanted to give her the chance, and it was an amazing, decision. She's grown the company, in the last, it's been 2.5 years. I want to say, is it 50%? Somewhere in 30 to 50% and this is a legacy company, Nick. So that is not an easy thing to do when you come in and, you can increase revenue, you can increase same store sales and, continue adding new franchises. She's doing a phenomenal job. She has a great team that supports her, and our franchisees are also wonderful. So did that, then started a new business called Shine Executive Coaching, where I get to coach founders and entrepreneurs to scale their business. And I feel continually blessed that I get to do what I love, and that is helping others.
Right. No kidding.
Yeah.
Yay. I'm so glad that you shared your story.
Yeah.
As I had mentioned at the beginning of the show, I was looking forward to helping folks level up through your journey. And it is certainly inspiring. As you mentioned, there are many ways to go about passing the baton, if you will.
Yep.
It doesn't have to just be private equity. And I can relate to so much of your story. And
that founder story, Nick.
The founder story. Yay. Yeah, certainly. And I love the garage roots and being able to start literally from, you said it was 1,400 square feet, right?
That was my house. Yeah.
So yeah.
The living room was probably what, 200 square feet, 200, 300, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure many folks watching can relate as well.
Yep.
I think what a lot of folks cannot relate to is successfully growing to over 100 locations, yep, starting from a 1,400 square foot home's garage, yes, and living room.
Yeah.
My goodness. So Shannon, so much respect for you and so much love for your leadership style. I love the fact that you put the Lord before your decisions and the way that you steward your company, all just so inspiring. And I hope that, you know, your story can inspire more folks to lead similarly, because it is an impressive legacy. And the way that you have empowered your franchise partners is just, it is the American dream. So thank you.
It does feel fun. It does feel fun to, yeah, you're very kind with your words. Thank you, Nick. But it absolutely feels fun to be able to look at these franchisees. And one of the things I do as an advisory board member and brand ambassador for Just Between Friends is I get to talk to franchisees, and I'm doing we're doing some case studies with some of our franchisees right now. And so I'm getting to have, you know, these amazing conversations with our franchisees and asking them about the transformation that is their life after they bought Just Between Friends, and what that looks like and the impact that it's had on them personally, both, financially and as a leader, right? Like we get to teach our franchisees how to lead their own companies. And it's very fulfilling to watch them take those steps and then have the financial reward that comes because of that. So it's been fun. I just texted three franchisees this morning about seeing if they would be willing to be a case study for us. And so those will be coming out. Probably that information will go on our franchise development website. So so if you want to look for those stories later, but it is, you're absolutely right. We get to sit in the seat of the Lord helping us grow something, and then the Lord, you know, pushing us into that place of leadership where it's a hard place, right? Being a founder, being a CEO of a brand, it's a really, really, really hard seat, but it's also a privilege and an opportunity. And, but it is very, very fun to see that your franchisees get to buy a second home, or they get to, you know, make more money than they were making it in their job previously, or that whatever it is they wanted, right? Because I think people come into the franchising space, especially as a franchisee, and they have goals that they want to meet for themselves and their family. And we get to be the conduit through what the Lord has gifted us, this, you know, whatever concept it is, to help them achieve those goals. And it feels really fun.
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, well said. And it is a great transition into something I was wanting to get your thoughts on.
Sure.
Because you're speaking to it. And, you know, why do you think more people invest, you know, something like $40,000 for a franchise as opposed to, you know, their own $40,000 startup idea?
I absolutely have an answer for that. I believe it's fear. Fear of, you know, franchising. Part of the allure of franchising is someone has gone before you and they have tested out the market in whatever the concept, whatever it is. They've tested it out. They've made sure that there is a market. They have figured out all of the issues that you would have to figure out. They know that there's money in it. There's some sort of, or they should know that there's money in it. Not everyone does. And so I think what I tell my clients, and this is something that David Barr, if you've been to any of his speaking engagements, he always says, franchising is the licensing of a business model that produces predictable cash flows to an average franchisee with average intelligence, with average work ethic on an average day. And what he's trying to do is just level the playing field and say, not that franchisees are average, but your model has to work for the average. And so if you're a founder and your concept is doing 1.4 million and you want to, let's go with easy math. It's doing a million, right? Your top level sales of your concept, whether it's a restaurant or a service-based brand like Lime, is doing $1 million. And the founder is pocketing, I don't know, 300. Let's say he's got 30% profitability. He's putting $300,000 a year in his pocket. He's like, okay, well, I want to franchise this. And, but right off the top, you have to take that, the money for royalties and the money for marketing brand fund fees and the, all of this stuff that, the franchisor is going to then use to support you in the continuance with legal, legislative, operations, marketing, all of that. So let's just call it, just for easy math, add it up, let's call it 10%. So they're going to take $100,000 of that million to support you, to pay for the staff, to travel, to see you, to help you get your store up and running, your location up and running. And then you're left with 200,000. Okay. That's the math that someone would do if they're like, I have this concept, it's doing a million. This is what I want my franchisees to do. And it shows what's possible, right? So someone can come in, you know, when you start franchising, someone can come into this and do $1 million in sales, theoretically. But I always tell my clients that typically the founder is not average. They are the people who are willing to take the risk. They are quick thinkers. They're quick decision makers. They move fast and hard and very driven, and they don't slow down. They're okay with risk. And so, you know, they fail fast and they also grow faster than the average person. So, but I think we as franchisors, we have to look and say, okay, what is possible? And we know $1 million is possible, but what is the average person going to do? Well, if the average person is going to make 800,000 in top level, is there still enough profitability for them? And then you have to do the math again, right? And I think that is the allure that the franchisor is taking 75% of the risk away. And so they can come in with a system, with a process. They don't have to ask a bunch of questions. Some franchisors even set you up with a bookkeeper. Some franchisors, one of my clients, you get administrative help and a bookkeeper. And some some like buzz brands. I think Mosquito Joe's was one of the first brands that I ever heard of where they take care of your marketing for you. You pay a significant marketing fee. I don't remember what it is, but maybe let's say it's, 5% instead of the normal 1 or 2, and they send out mailers on your behalf. So anyway, you are buying into something that is proven. So
well
that
said.
Was a long answer to to your question about why.
Yeah, and that is textbook, but let's be real, Shannon.
Yep.
Does the average entrepreneur overestimate innovation and underestimate execution?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I'm raising my hand to that. I think you said underestimate innovation, right?
Yep. Overestimate innovation and underestimate execution.
Okay. Yeah. Well, and if you're a founder, if you happen to be a founder/visionary, you absolutely know. I think you and I are both visionaries, Nick, right? You're a visionary, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yep. Me too. Me too. And I really figured out early that I needed help. I needed someone to help me execute on the details. I knew that I was not a detail person. I didn't really feel like I was an idea person, but I think it was because I was so down in the weeds of the business that I didn't have a lot of ideas. We definitely used our franchisees for ideation and innovation. And I will tell you, I didn't truly understand the EOS concept of having a visionary and an integrator. And when I read Rocket Fuel, which I know you've read that too, it's probably somewhere on your shelf behind your head.
But it's there, yep.
Yeah. Rocket Fuel is one of the tractions in the traction portfolio of books, but it is a great book for your audience if they want to better understand if they're a visionary or an integrator. Visionary, there's even assessments in there for both. So you can answer the questions and it'll let you know, are you a visionary? Are you an integrator? And so once we went through the process in our brand to put the entrepreneurial operating system to work for us, going through Traction, hiring an implementer, and figuring out, okay, Shannon, you're the visionary and we need to put a president in place or a COO or something like that. So once we did that, it was that right there, that one decision, transformational for me as a leader, also for our brand, just the growth engine that it's like it got kicked in the butt when we went through EOS. And I believe that is that. And we went through EOS in 21 and 22. 21 and 22 were our first full years. So I had single digit growth for a really long time, which I'm not complaining. Like, we were growing. But I was ready for those first few years of growing. You have significant percentage of growth because you're so small, right? And you are like, okay, 100% growth. Yes. 50% growth. Amazing. And then all of a sudden it kind of slowed down, and that single digit growth, I was like, oh, like, what can we do? What can we do? And, I saw Shelly Sun is the founder of Bright Star Care, and she got up at a conference. This was probably 2017, 2018, and she held up this book called Traction, and she went on and on about it. And I'm like, writing it down. I gotta buy this book. So I went and bought the book, and then I started reading it. And so I made my whole executive team get it. We're like, okay, we're going to self-implement, because at the time, to do an implementation, it was like a $50,000 expense over 2 years. And I had not budgeted for that expense. And so I was like, let's self-implement. Well, that lasted all of like 6 or 7 weeks. And then it went wah, wah, and did not work at all. And so then that was in 2018. And so I told my CFO, I'm like, let's put it in the budget for 2019. And so we put it in the budget for 2019. And then he came to me, he said, Shannon, you don't really have enough like executive team leaders, because he said, I think what's going to happen is you're going to want to have people implement this stuff, and you're not going to have enough people to implement. And so I listened to him and I was like, okay, well then in 2019, we'll use some of that budget to level up some leaders and get them into some executive positions, which is exactly what we did. And so at the end of 2019, I think I made two promotions and hired someone to do to add to our executive team, so that we were ready and poised in 2020 to start doing EOS. Well, we all know what happened in 2020, and we are an event-based business where people gather. And so the fact that Just Between Friends is still around is like a testament to the Lord and PPP funds. We were definite recipients of that. So anyway, we thankfully got through that process, and I forgot my train of thought. I was going down a road.
Right. Yeah. No, obviously EOS is very impactful, and Traction is, one of those books that helps turn the light on. I could relate, Shally. I was probably at the same conference when she handed out Traction and Rocket Fuel, and leveling up that home office team is critical. And I know you were just sharing that.
Yeah. So we ended up in 2021, we ended up starting the EOS process. And in 2022, it was our first big double digit year. We grew 23% in 2022, that was crazy. And then the next year under Tracy's leadership, she grew another 20%. So we hit another 20. And then last year she grew another double digit year, like I think maybe 11%. And, we had our advisory board meeting, and she was like, oh, we're not hitting the 20s. And the advisory board was like, if you have any growth right now, like I'd be popping the champagne, you know? So it was a good kind of level set for her to understand, like, you're doing great. Your franchisees' businesses are growing. And so anyway, really, really great transformative process. I would recommend EOS to anyone. And I know you're a fan.
Right. Yeah. I'm definitely visionary. And what's neat is EOS has a tool. You can go online to their website and test to see, hey, are you more visionary, more integrator? And I actually score high in both.
Okay.
You know, most founders have to do both. You know, most entrepreneurs have to do both, especially in startup mode. Whether you're good at executing or vision or not, you wear both seats.
Yep.
Understanding where your lane is and then doubling down as that visionary alongside your integrator or vice versa, you know, that creates incredible momentum. And I love how that propelled and helped grow and take your brand to the next level. And that's franchising at work, right? As the franchisor, your job is to go wide and award as many qualified, viable markets as possible to folks that are going to help take the brand to the next level. And the franchise partners, their job is really to go deep in their market, acquire as much market share, become that number one provider, and together you go wide and deep. And as that franchise partners focus on executing on the model, right, the more they focus there, the more happy clients there are, the more the brand grows on the local level. And that is the power of franchising.
Yeah. And I think the by design, that it's amazing. Like, there are some things that I don't want to be first in. And I think a lot of people who would like the American dream, they would like to become a millionaire. They would like to provide well for their family. They would like to, you know, whatever it is, this is absolutely an avenue for them to make that dream come true.
Right. Yeah. It's joining a community, a culture that aligns with your skills, your personality, and what you're looking for. Success might not be monetary per se. It may be the flexibility, the freedom, the combination of what entrepreneurship provides versus a job where you are answering to a boss and you are in corporate America. And that is also a big testament to franchising and what it provides. And it's so multifaceted, but more than anything, it leverages what makes people the most dominant species on the planet, which is communication and collaboration. Yep. And that makes it worth waking up and going out and making history for whatever it is you do, whatever system you're in. And so, Shannon, I wanted to ask you, why do you think people still think that franchising is buying a job when done right, isn't it buying a legacy?
Yeah, I think probably there have been franchisees that they look at whatever concept and they're at home thinking, okay, I'm making $70,000-$80,000 a year. What is it that I can do from home or not from home, right? What is it that I could do to take something into my own hands and make about the same money? I think it depends on when people come into the franchising space, what their goals are, because some franchises do act like a job, right? If you're not, if there's not a ton of profitability left over, if there's not an opportunity to be multi-unit, whatever people are looking for, they're going to be able to find it. Because there's 4,000 brands in the franchising space domestically. I have no idea about internationally, but you're going to be able to find what you're looking for sure.
Right. And so it's much more than just a job. But what I do want to emphasize is the execution part. Mm-hmm. So many times, especially as of late, and maybe this has been a franchising old age deal, but execution is 100% in the hands of the franchise partner.
100%. I have a couple of franchisees as clients. Most of my clients are franchisors, emerging brand franchisors, but I do have a couple of franchisees as clients currently. And there are ways to scale as a franchisee. It is through multi-unit, but you have to get the right people in the right seats. You have to get someone in there that if you want to come in and you want it to be your job, then you are not going to scale. Because if it's your job, you're going to be doing the day-to-day stuff. You're going to be the one painting. You're going to be the one, running the cash register. You're going to be the one making the phone calls. But if you do want to scale where it's more than just a job, you're going to have to trust people. And I think that's a really hard step for a lot of people is like, I know, by the way, I'm raising my hand because I sat in that seat too many times in all of my entrepreneurial journeys of like, well, I know how to do it, so I'm just going to do it versus I know how to do it so I can train someone else to do it. And when I would love for franchisees to think about that because I think the ones that know that they need to get out of the doing seat and into the visioning seat for their franchise, they're going to go further faster, and it's not going to be a job. It's going to be way bigger than a job. It's going to be empowering a team. It's really fun to think about. And, you know, Tracy did that really well. And just between friends, she came in and she knew that, okay. And it's funny, I almost wrote a blog on this. It's still on my list. I need to write a blog on this, but I call it waving with my latte. So if you know, and you know, thinking about it just between friends, what I told my franchisees, because this was one of our franchisees, she said that was her goal. And I was like, that is the best goal. She said, I know that if I show up to my event with my latte, and all I have to do is wave at the people coming in the door to go shopping and wave at them when they're leaving with all of their deals, I know that I have made it. But that was her singular focus, to be waving with a latte. And so therefore her goals centered around getting the right people in the right seat, not, I'm good at this. So I'm going to hold on to this with all my might. And, so she, you know, which I thought that is a great goal.
Right. Yeah. And as a franchise partner, right, as you're considering different options, as we were talking about, 4,000 different brands, not every brand is the same, which means not every brand has a simple, scalable model that allows you to go through a season of learning the business model and working your way out of it. Not every brand has the culture that has folks that have been there and done that and can help shepherd and lead the way of growing and leveling up and working your way out of the day-to-day. Or maybe a model has a general manager from day one, but knowing that execution has to be fulfilled, whether it's through a team or yourself, whatever the setup is for the business, that team component, not only just now, but 2-5, you know, years down the road, how does that evolve so that you can get the outcome that you're looking for? Yep. Are you wanting to scale an empire? Are you wanting to be an owner operator? What does that look like? Because so many times folks approach discovery as, hey, I'm going to become a franchise partner. But I always like to help people realize that it's not just about becoming an owner. It's about being one. And, you know, getting your headspace and your paradigm 2-5 years down the road, when you are an owner, now you can go through discovery with a different lens for, okay, am I working with a really good sales guy, or am I working with a really good system that's going to give me what I want? Yep. And am I working with both, right? And that's the fun part of franchising. Most folks don't explore franchising every day. They usually go through it once or twice. So congrats if you're going through it. Keep down the path, keep executing. You're growing those muscles of doing just that, executing while you don't have all the answers. And that is the beauty of entrepreneurship. And that's what franchise partners do in a system. They're 1,000% entrepreneurs. But yes, they have a playbook. They have systems and processes. But you know what? Once you're an owner, you're innovating and collaborating and growing the brand. You're a part of that collective system that is the franchise and makes franchising one of the most dominant forces on the planet.
Yes.
So Shannon, with that being said, why do you love franchising?
I want to go, ha, ha, ha.
Yay.
That was a good speech.
You've inspired me. So thank you. But why do you love franchising so much?
I really don't know. It just got a hold of me. It got a hold of me. I love the community. The franchising community is amazing. They give back lots and lots of inspiring individuals. So I think if you have people that are going before you that, you know, they've shown what can be done, what's possible. And then you get in that space and you can kind of see and forecast what your life might be like in a few years. It feels fun. So.
Right. And that culture, I so agree, Shannon. And that culture, not only on a system or a brand level, but that permeates between across the entire space, right?
Totally.
When all the brand leaders and all the partners that make our brands grow, that help our brands grow, that work in tandem, that are so important to every brand's growth. When everyone gets together, that system culture of collaboration, there's nothing like it. And it bleeds into the space, which to your point, so many incredible entrepreneurs that are just that, entrepreneurs delivering high quality solutions in a consistent manner. That is franchising the playbook, so that no matter, you know, whether you're in New Jersey or LA or Denver or Tulsa, you are going to have a similar experience. And that allows for many jobs to be created, many customers to be served, many franchise partners to have opportunities to be business owners. I started my painting journey almost 20 years ago now, Shannon, and franchising.
That's crazy.
I know. And franchise is about 16. So I have similarly been inspired, and I have leveled up having you on the show, Shannon.
So
many hot takes here. Thank you so much.
Yes. Thanks for having me, Nick. This has been fun.
So if anyone would like to get in touch with you and learn about Shine Executive Coaching, they want to take their franchise system to the next level, their business ownership skills as a franchise partner to the next level, or they want to learn about Just Between Friends, how can they reach out and learn more?
I'm very active on LinkedIn. So Shannon Wilburn on LinkedIn. Currently, it's a bright pink outfit that I'm wearing, so that'll help. But also shineexecutivecoaching.com is my website.
All right. Well, you heard it from Shannon. Hyde. And if you like the show, please subscribe. It's how we're able to continue to grow and bring thought leaders like Shannon onto the show. Drop a comment. We would love to hear your thoughts. And as always, level up.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Level Up with Nick Lopez Show. Remember, it's never too late to get started on your entrepreneurial journey. Don't forget to subscribe, like, and share if you enjoyed today's segment. Catch us again next week and visit linepainting.com for more of the Level Up with Nick Lopez Show.